So the third and final presentation in this session is by Nazem El Husseini, and the title is, Does Nitrosative Stress Play a Role in Mediating the Embryo Toxicity Induced by Hydroxyurea?
Good afternoon, everyone. So, okay. I have to go this way. So I'll get right into it. Oh, okay. That's more helpful. So I'll get right into it. So first off, I want to give a brief introduction about hydroxyurea and how it's related to congenital defects. So hydroxyurea is a drug used in the clinic to treat sickle cell anemia and other myeloproliferative diseases such as chronic myeloid leukemia. However, it's a well-characterized teratogen in animal models where it exhibits a significant embryo lethality and also developmental defects. These include defects such as exencephaly, cleft palate, shortened curly tails, and limb deformities in the rat and mouse embryos. And it has also been correlated with embryonic cell death. Now, one of the first hypotheses for the mechanism of hydroxyurea's teratogenesis was postulated by John DiCesso, who suggested that the mechanism was by oxidative stress. And this was based on his observations in rat embryos, where when he pre-treated them with an antioxidant, propylgalate, the effects of hydroxyurea were ameliorated. Now, as most of you know, oxidative stress occurs when there's an excess in reactive oxygen species, such as those listed here, or when there's a decrease in the antioxidant defense mechanism in the embryo. Now, previous studies in the Hales lab have shown that hydroxyurea exposure to murine embryos does elicit an oxidative stress response. And this has been shown by an increase in DNA binding activity of the redox sensitive transcription factor AP1, as well as an increase in the oxidized reduced ratio of glutathione, which is a cellular antioxidant, as well as the increase in the formation of 4-hydroxy nonanal adducts, which is a known marker for oxidative stress. In addition, what's interesting about this marker is that it was found to be specifically localized to regions that are known to be vulnerable to the effects of hydroxyurea, namely the caudal region or the tail region, as shown by this immunofluorescence image here. So what is also known about hydroxyurea is that it can release reactive nitrogen species, and this occurs through its hydroxylamine moiety, where through a series of reactions can release the nitric oxide radical. Now, in separate studies, when rat embryos are exposed to a nitric oxide donating compound, it resulted in a decrease in embryo survival and a decrease in the number of somites formed, as well as other abnormal cephalic and caudal development, as you can see here. So it seems there's a relation between a nitric oxide and the causation of embryo toxicity. So reactive nitrogen species are nitrogen-based radicals that, similar to reactive oxygen species, are also powerful oxidizing agents. And they are formed primarily by the nitric oxide radical, which reacts endogenously with the superoxide radical to form peroxynitrite, which is a very a reactive species. This, in turn, oxidizes a lot of proteins that contain transition metal centers and cysteine residues. Peroxynitrite then becomes degraded into a hydroxyl radical and a nitric dioxide radical. And this nitric dioxide radical can then nitrate tyrosine residues on proteins. And like this schematic shows here that the nitric oxide radical becomes conjugated to the ortho position of the tyrosine residues. And I will explain this further in detail later. So these modifications have been shown in many in vitro studies to affect the function and structure of critical proteins and hence affect important cellular pathways leading to cell damage and tissue injury. Now, in terms of the hydroxyurea's action in the embryo, what we know now is that hydroxyurea elicits an oxidative stress response through the production of reactive oxygen species, and that this is related to the embryo toxicity observed. So the question we wanted to ask was whether hydroxyurea causes a nitrosative stress response, and is that due to the production of reactive nitrogen species, and is that related to the embryo toxicity observed as well? So this leads us to the hypothesis that the doses of hydroxyurea that produce congenital defects cause nitrosative stress in the mouse embryo. So the way we went about to ask to determine the validity of the hypothesis was first to determine the effect of hydroxyurea exposure on murine embryos in vivo. And we determined this by measuring or determining the formation of 3-nitrotyrosine. So, like I mentioned before, this is one of the stable byproducts of nitrosative stress, and there are several commercial antibodies available that would allow us to detect it. So the methods we used was injecting pregnant CD1 mice at gestational day 9 with either saline as our control or a dose of hydroxyurea. Then the embryos were excised at 0.5, 3, and 6 hours after treatment. And we processed the samples for gel electrophoresis and determined 3-nitrotyrosine expression using Western blots. Now, as you can see in this representative Western blot, there is a 3-nitrotyrosine expression at each of the time points, so the 0.5, 3 hour, and 6 hours. And what is interesting is that there's a formation of 3-nitrotyrosine in the control lanes as well as the treated groups or lanes. And this suggests that 3-nitrotyrosine is present endogenously in the mouse embryo. And if you look at each lane, you'll find that there are multiple bands exhibiting 3-nitrotyrosine, suggesting that this modification affects a wide range of proteins. However, when we quantify the intensity of the treated to the control groups in each time point, we found that there was no significant increase in the formation of 3-nitrotyrosine by the treatment of hydroxyurea, which suggests that hydroxyurea does not increase 3-nitrotyrosine formation in the mouse embryo. So later on, we wanted to examine and localize the 3-nitrotyrosine immunoreactivity in the whole embryo, so to see if it's widespread throughout the whole embryo or is it specific to a local region similar to 4-hydroxynonenal. So again, we injected pregnant mice with either saline or hydroxyurea and took out the embryos at the 3-hour time point. And then using immunofluorescence microscopy, we examined the immunoreactivity of 3-nitrotyrosine in fixed embryo sections. And as you can see here from these confocal images, immunofluorescence images, 3-nitrotyrosine is widespread in the whole embryo and is not localized to a certain region. And in addition, there seems to be 3-nitrotyrosine in the control group as well as the treated, which reflects the data we got from the Western blots. So in order to try to assess nitrosative stress using a different marker, we determined the total nitric oxide concentration in the treated and the control groups after hydroxyurea treatment, since nitric oxide is the primary radical for the formation of reactive nitrogen species. So again, we excise the embryos at set time points from treated CD1 mice, and we use the special nitrate colorimetric assay, which indirectly measures the total nitric oxide concentration in the samples. Now, briefly, the way this assay works is that it measures the total nitrite and nitrate concentrations in the sample, and these are the two stable metabolites of nitric oxide. And this occurs through two steps. So in the first step, total nitrate is converted to nitrite using a nitrate reductase enzyme, whereupon nitrite is reacted with two special reagents known as grease reagent 1 and 2 to give a colored compound that can be measured spectrophotometrically. And this allows us to plot a standard curve, and then we can easily find out the concentration of the nitric oxide in our samples. However, when we ran the assay, we found that there was no significant change in nitric oxide concentration between the treated and the control groups at each of the time points. So to summarize and conclude, we found that hydroxyurea does not induce significant increase in 3-nitrotyrosine expression as seen in the Western blots. And again, as well as that the 3-nitrotyrosine is widespread throughout the whole embryo, again, in both the control and the treated groups. And lastly, the nitric oxide assay showed that the concentration of nitric oxide in the embryo is not significantly changed after treatment with hydroxyurea. So based on these observations and on these markers, we can conclude that hydroxyurea does not induce nitrosate stress in the murine embryo. So lastly, I'd like to thank my supervisor, Dr. Barbara Hales, the members of my committee, and the members of the Hales Lab for the support, and as well as the funding agencies that made this project possible. Okay, thank you. So the question was, are you saying that based on these results, can I say for sure that it's not nitrosative stress? So based on these markers, I can say that, yes. However, I plan to examine a third marker using like special fluorescent dyes to look for peroxynitrite, in vitro cultures, because that could give me a more concrete idea of whether definitely it is not nitrosative stress induced.
So I have two quick questions. The cleft palate and the overall defects that you see, do you know if they're caused by cell death specifically or what the mechanism is for the abnormalities that you see in those embryos?
So the abnormalities that I showed, these are actually from other studies. I don't know, do these studies specifically, but so what I do know from the literature is that there seems to be a correlation between the embryonic cell death and oxidative stress. However, there is also a theory that it is due to the effect of hydroxyurea on DNA damage. So that is still something that we need to further investigate.
Okay, and my second question is, do you know if there are any transcription factors or growth factors that are affected as a consequence of treatment with the HU?
Well, there was the one I mentioned was AP1 or activated protein 1. So the DNA binding activity of that factor is increased.
But have you looked at any of the ones? So there's a bunch of other genes where you mutate them and you get a phenotype that's kind of similar to those embryos you were showing. Mm-hmm. So have you looked at the expression of any of those transcription factors to see if maybe you're changing their expression levels or localization or anything like that?
Personally, I haven't. I'm just trying to recollect if someone else in the lab has... What I can remember is that there was a study on AP1, but I can't remember if there was on other transcription factors, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay.
Sorry?
Somebody's answering.
Oh, yeah, because... So... Yeah.
So, okay.
So...
No FGFs changes,
yeah.
Or... But do you know if they're on your array, even? FGF7.
Yeah.
Thank
so
you.
That was an experiment Ava did. So she did in the microarray recently, and from what I remember is that there was not significant changes in transcription factor activation. Yeah, that's all I can say.
Thank you.
Yes, nice talk. I just want to have a comment and maybe a suggestion. Are you thinking to that maybe it's not a nitrosic oxidative stress, but an oxidative stress? Because we know that cells can... The nitric oxide can induce superoxide and H2O2 production.
Yeah.
So are you planning to look for markers of oxidative stress?
So the previous studies in the lab have studied specifically oxidative stress, and I think that is where my project was a bit different, is that I was trying to focus specifically on nitrosative stress. So we do know that oxidative stress is caused by hydroxyurea.
Yeah, but the idea is that in your model, maybe the nitric oxide is inducing superoxide production. So, this is easy to demonstrate.
One possibility is that because of nitrosative stress, a lot of proteins are modified, and one of them is superoxide dismutase. So it could be that nitrosative stress could lead to the stimulation of reactive oxygen species by modification of
nitric oxide can induce NOX1, which produce superoxide. Superoxide dismutase will produce H2O2, not superoxide.
No, I was saying that it could affect the activity of superoxide dismutase.
So then you will
it wouldn't produce, no, I'm not saying that it would produce superoxide.
No, then you will have an increase
in superoxide.
In H2O2, because superoxide would spontaneously dismutate to H2O2. So at the end, you will have H2O2. But what I'm suggesting to you is to look for induction of superoxide production by nitric oxide in your system.
Okay. Thank you.
So because we're running short on time, we're going to do a quick health break. And so if we could all meet back in 10 minutes, that'd be great. Thank you.